Sophie remembered the grand house in Grosvenor Square as if she'd been there the night before. The ballroom was huge, with hundreds of sconces on the walls, each adorned by a perfect beeswax candle. The smaller rooms had been decorated in the Adam style, with exquisitely scalloped ceilings and pale pastel walls. It had been Sophie's dream house, quite literally. In all her dreams of Benedict and their fictional future together, she'd always seen herself in that house. It was silly, she knew, since he was a second son and thus not in line to inherit the property. But still, it was the most beautiful home she'd ever beheld, and dreams weren't meant to be about reality anyway. If Sophie had wanted to dream her way right into Kensington Palace, that was her prerogative. Of course, she thought with a wry smile, she wasn't likely ever to see the interior of Kensington Palace. "What are you smiling about?" Benedict demanded. She didn't bother to glance up as she replied,
"I'm plotting your demise."
He grinned, not that she was looking at him, but it was one of those smiles she could hear in the way he breathed. She hated that she was that sensitive to his every nuance, especially since she had a sneaking suspicion that he was the same way about her.
"At least it sounds entertaining," he said.
"What does?" she asked, finally moving her eyes from the lower hem of the curtain, which she'd been staring at for what seemed like hours.
"My demise," he said, his smile crooked and amused. "If you're going to kill me, you might as well enjoy yourself while you're at it, because Lord knows I won't."
Her jaw dropped a good inch.
"You're mad," she said.
"Probably."
He shrugged rather casually before settling back in his seat and propping his feet up on the bench across from him.
"I've all but kidnapped you, after all. I should think that would qualify as the maddest thing I've ever done."
"You could let me go now," she said,
even though she knew he never would.
"Here in London, where you could be attacked by footpads at any moment. That would be most irresponsible of me, don't you think?"
"It hardly compares to abducting me against my will."
"I didn't abduct you," he said,
idly examining his fingernails.
"I blackmailed you. There's a world of difference."
Sophie was saved from having to reply by the jolt of the carriage as it ground to a halt. Benedict flipped back the curtains one last time, then let them fall into place.
"Oh, here we are."
Sophie waited while he disembarked, then moved to the doorway. She briefly considered ignoring his outstretched hand and jumping down herself, but the carriage was quite high off the ground, and she really didn't wish to make a fool of herself by tripping and landing in the gutter. It would be nice to insult him, but not at the cost of a sprained ankle. With a sigh, she took his hand.
"Very smart of you," Benedict murmured.
Sophie looked at him sharply. How did he know what she'd been thinking?
"I almost always know what you're thinking," he said.
She tripped.
"Whoa!"
he called out, catching her expertly before she landed in the gutter. He held her just a moment longer than was necessary before depositing her on the pavement. Sophie would have said something, except that her teeth were ground together far too tightly for words.
"Doesn't the irony just kill you?"
Benedict asked, smiling wickedly. She pried open her jaw.
"No, but it may very well kill you."
He laughed, the blasted man.
"Come along," he said. "I'll introduce you to my mother. I'm sure she'll find some position or another for you."
"She may not have any openings,"
Sophie pointed out. He shrugged.
"She loves me. She'll make an opening."
Sophie held her ground, refusing to take a single step alongside him until she'd made her point.
"I'm not going to be your mistress."
His expression was remarkably bland as he murmured,
"Yes, you've said as much."
"No, I mean, your plan isn't going to work."
He was all innocence.
"I have a plan."
"Oh, please,"
she scoffed.
"You're going to try to wear me down in hopes that eventually I'll give in."
"I would never dream of it."
"I'm sure you dream of quite a bit more,"
she muttered. He must have heard her because he chuckled. Sophie crossed her arms mutinously, not caring that she looked most undignified in such a position, standing right there on the pavement in full view of the world. No one would pay her half a mind anyway, dressed as she was in the coarse woolens of a servant. She supposed she ought to adopt a brighter outlook and approach her new position with a more optimistic attitude. But drat it all, she wanted to be sullen just then. Frankly, she thought she'd earned it. If anyone had a right to be sullen and disgruntled, it was she. "We could stand here on the pavement all day," Benedict said, his voice slightly laced with sarcasm. She started to shoot him an angry glare, but that was when she noticed where they were standing. They weren't in Grosvenor Square. Sophie wasn't even certain where they were. Mayfair, to be sure, but the house before them definitely wasn't the house at which she'd attended the masquerade.
Is this Bridgerton House? She asked.
He quirked a brow. "How did you know my home is called Bridgerton House?"
"You've mentioned it."
Which was, thankfully, true. He'd talked about both Bridgerton House and the Bridgertons' country residence, Aubrey Hall, several times during their conversations. "Oh." He seemed to accept that. "Well, no, actually it's not. My mother moved out of Bridgerton House nearly 2 years ago. She hosted one last ball. It was a masquerade, actually, and then turned the residence over to my brother and his wife. She'd always said she would leave just as soon as he married and started a family of his own. I believe his first child was born a mere month after she left."
"Was it a boy or a girl?"
she asked, even though she knew the answer. Lady Whistledown always reported such things. "A boy, Edmund. They had another son, Miles, earlier this year."
"How nice for them," Sophie murmured, even though it felt like her heart was strangling.
She wasn't likely to have children of her own, and that was one of the saddest realizations she'd ever reached. Children required a husband, and marriage seemed a pipe dream. She hadn't been raised to be a servant, and thus she had very little in common with most of the men she met in her daily life. Not that the other servants weren't good and honourable people, but it was difficult to imagine sharing her life with someone who, for example, couldn't read. Sophie didn't need to marry someone of particularly high birth, but even the middle class was out of her reach. No self-respecting man in trade would marry a housemaid. Benedict motioned for her to follow him, and she did, until they reached the front steps. Sophie shook her head.
"I'll use the side entrance."
His lips thinned. "You'll use the front entrance."
"I'll use the side entrance," she said firmly. "No woman of breeding will hire a maid who enters through the front."
"You're with me," he ground out. "You'll use the front entrance." A bubble of mirth escaped her lips.
"Benedict, just yesterday you wanted me to become your mistress. Would you dare bring your mistress to meet your mother through the front door?"
She'd confounded him with that. Sophie grinned as she watched his face twist with frustration. She felt better than she had in days.
"Would you,"
she continued, mostly just to torture him further,
"bring your mistress to meet her at all?"
"You're not my mistress," he bit off.
"Indeed."
His chin jutted out, and his eyes bored into hers with barely leashed fury. "You're a bloody little housemaid," he said, his voice low, "because you've insisted upon being a housemaid. And as a housemaid you are, if somewhat low on the social scale, still utterly respectable. Certainly respectable enough for my mother." Sophie's smile faltered. She might have pushed him too far. "Good," Benedict grunted, once it was clear that she was not going to argue the point any further. "Come with me." Sophie followed him up the steps. This might actually work to her advantage. Benedict's mother surely would not hire a maid who had the effrontery to use the front door. And since she had steadfastly refused to be Benedict's mistress, he would have to accept defeat and allow her to return to the country. Benedict pushed open the front door, holding it until Sophie entered before him. The butler arrived within seconds.
"Wickham," Benedict said, "kindly inform my mother that I am here."
"I will indeed, Mr. Bridgerton,"
Wickham replied.
"And might I take the liberty of informing you that she has been rather curious as to your whereabouts this past week?"
"I would be shocked if she hadn't been," Benedict replied.
Wickham nodded toward Sophie with an expression that hovered somewhere between curiosity and disdain.
"Might I inform her of your guest's arrival?"
"Please do."
"Might I inform her of your guest's identity?"
Sophie looked over at Benedict with great interest, wondering what he'd say.
"Her name is Miss Beckett," Benedict replied. "She is here to seek employment."
One of Wickham's brows rose. Sophie was surprised. She didn't think that butlers were supposed to show any expression whatsoever.
"As a maid?" Wickham inquired.
"As whatever,"
Benedict said, his tone beginning to show the first traces of impatience.
"Very good, Mr. Bridgerton,"
Wickham said, and then he disappeared up the staircase.
"I don't think he thought it was very good at all,"
Sophie whispered to Benedict, careful to hide her smile.
"Wickham is not in charge here."
Sophie let out a little, "whatever you say,"
sort of sigh.
"I imagine Wickham would disagree."
He looked at her with disbelief.
"He's the butler."
"And I'm a housemaid. I know all about butlers. More, I dare say, than you do."
His eyes narrowed. "You act less like a housemaid than any woman of my acquaintance." She shrugged and pretended to inspect a still life painting on the wall.
"You bring out the worst in me, Mr. Bridgerton."
"Benedict," he hissed. "You've called me by my given name before. Use it now."
"Your mother is about to descend the stairs," she reminded him. "And you are insisting that she hire me as a housemaid. Do many of your servants call you by your given name?"
He glared at her, and she knew he knew she was right.
"You can't have it both ways, Mr. Bridgerton," she said, allowing herself a tiny smile.
"I only wanted it one way," he growled.
"Benedict!"
Sophie looked up to see an elegant, petite woman descending the stairs. Her colouring was fairer than Benedict's, but her features marked her clearly as his mother.
"Mother,"
he said, striding to meet her at the bottom of the stairs.
"It is good to see you."
"It would be better to see you," she said pertly, "had I known where you were this past week. The last I'd heard, you'd gone off to the Cavender party, and then everyone returned without you."
"I left the party early," he replied, "then went off to my cottage."
His mother sighed.
"I suppose I can't expect you to notify me of your every movement, now that you're 30 years of age."
Benedict gave her an indulgent smile. She turned to Sophie.
"This must be your Miss Beckett."
"Indeed," Benedict replied. "She saved my life while I was at my cottage."
Sophie started.
"I didn't."
"She did,"
Benedict cut in smoothly.
"I took ill from driving in the rain, and she nursed me to health."
"You would have recuperated without me,"
she insisted.
"But not," Benedict said, directing his words at his mother, "with such speed or in such comfort."
"Weren't the Crabtrees at home?" Violet asked.
"Not when we arrived," Benedict replied.
Violet looked at Sophie with such obvious curiosity that Benedict was finally forced to explain.
"Miss Beckett had been employed by the Cavenders, but certain circumstances made it impossible for her to stay."
"I see,"
Violet said unconvincingly.
"Your son saved me from a most unpleasant fate,"
Sophie said quietly.
"I owe him a great deal of thanks."
Benedict looked to her in surprise. Given the level of her hostility toward him, he hadn't expected her to volunteer complimentary information. But he supposed he should have done. Sophie was highly principled, not the sort to let anger interfere with honesty. It was one of the things he liked best about her.
I see,
Violet said again, this time with considerably more feeling.
I was hoping you might find her a position in your household,
Benedict said.
But not if it's too much trouble,
Sophie hastened to add.
No,
Violet said slowly, her eyes settling on Sophie's face with a curious expression.
No, it wouldn't be any trouble at all, but...
Both Benedict and Sophie leaned forward, awaiting the rest of the sentence.
Have we met?
Violet suddenly asked.
I don't think so,
Sophie said, stammering slightly. How could Lady Bridgerton think she knew her? She was positive their paths had not crossed at the masquerade.
I can't imagine how we could have done. I'm certain you're right,
Lady Bridgerton said with a wave of her hand.
There is something vaguely familiar about you, but I'm sure it's just that I've met someone with similar features. It happens all the time.
Especially to me, Benedict said with a crooked smile.
Lady Bridgerton looked to her son with obvious affection.
It's not my fault all my children ended up looking remarkably alike.
If the blame can't be placed with you, Benedict asked, then where may we place it?
Entirely upon your father,
Lady Bridgerton replied jauntily. She turned to Sophie.
They all look just like my late husband.
Sophie knew she should remain silent, but the moment was so lovely and comfortable that she said,
I think your son resembles you. Do you think?
Lady Bridgerton asked, clasping her hands together with delight.
How lovely! And here I've always just considered myself a vessel for the Bridgerton family.
Mother,
Benedict said. She sighed.
Am I speaking too plainly? I do that more and more in my old age.
You are hardly elderly, Mother.
She smiled.
Benedict, why don't you go visit with your sisters while I take your Miss Bennet?
Beckett, he interrupted.
Yes, of course. Beckett, she murmured. I shall take her upstairs and get her settled in. You need only take me to the housekeeper,
Sophie said. It was most odd for a lady of the house to concern herself with the hiring of a housemaid. Granted, the entire situation was unusual, what with Benedict asking that she be hired on, but it was very strange that Lady Bridgerton would take a personal interest in her.
Mrs. Watkins is busy, I'm sure,
Lady Bridgerton said.
Besides, I believe we have need for another lady's maid upstairs. Have you any experience in that area?
Sophie nodded.
Excellent. I thought you might. You speak very well. My mother was a housekeeper,
Sophie said automatically.
She worked for a very generous family and...
She broke off in horror, belatedly remembering that she'd told Benedict the truth, that her mother had died at her birth. She shot him a nervous look, and he answered it with a vaguely mocking tilt of his chin, silently telling her that he wasn't going to expose her lie.
The family she worked for was very generous,
Sophie continued, a relieved rush of air passing across her lips, and they allowed me to share many lessons with the daughters of the house.
I see, Lady Bridgerton said. That explains a great deal. I find it difficult to believe you've been toiling as a housemaid. You are clearly educated enough to pursue loftier positions.
She reads quite well, Benedict said.
Sophie looked to him in surprise. He ignored her, instead saying to his mother,
She read to me a great deal during my recuperation.
Do you write as well?
Lady Bridgerton asked. Sophie nodded.
My penmanship is quite neat. Excellent. It is always handy to have an extra pair of hands at my disposal when we are addressing invitations. And we do have a ball coming up later in the summer. I have two girls out this year,
she explained to Sophie.
I'm hopeful that one of them will choose a husband before the season is through.
I don't think Eloise wants to marry, Benedict said.
Quiet your mouth,
Lady Bridgerton said.
Such a statement is sacrilege around here, Benedict said to Sophie.
Don't listen to him,
Lady Bridgerton said, walking toward the stairs.
Here, come with me, Miss Beckett. What did you say your given name was?
Sophia. Sophie.
Come with me, Sophie. I'll introduce you to the girls. And, she added, her nose crinkling with distaste, we'll find you something new to wear. I cannot have one of our maids dressed so shabbily. A person would think we didn't pay you a fair wage.
It had never been Sophie's experience that members of the ton were concerned about paying their servants fairly, and she was touched by Lady Bridgerton's generosity.
You, Lady Bridgerton said to Benedict, wait for me downstairs. We have much to discuss, you and I.
I'm quaking in my boots, he deadpanned.
Between him and his brother, I don't know which one of them will kill me first, Lady Bridgerton muttered.
Which brother?
Sophie asked.
Either, both, all three. Scoundrels, the lot of them.
But they were scoundrels she clearly loved. Sophie could hear it in the way she spoke, see it in her eyes when they lit with joy upon seeing her son. And it made Sophie lonely and wistful and jealous. How different her life might have been had her mother lived through childbirth. They might have been unrespectable, Mrs. Beckett a mistress and Sophie a bastard, but Sophie liked to think that her mother would have loved her, which was more than she received from any other adult, her father included.
Come along, Sophie,
Lady Bridgerton said briskly. Sophie followed her up the stairs, wondering why, if she were merely about to begin a new job, she felt as if she were entering a new family. It felt nice, and it had been a long, long while since her life had felt nice. Chapter 14.
Rosamund Riling swears that she saw Benedict Bridgerton back in London. This author is inclined to believe the veracity of the account. Miss Riling can spot an unmarried bachelor at 50 paces. Unfortunately for Miss Riling, she can't seem to land one.
Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 12th of May, 1817. Benedict had barely taken two steps toward the sitting room when his sister Eloise came dashing down the hall. Like all the Bridgertons, she had thick, chestnut hair and a wide smile. Unlike Benedict, however, her eyes were a clear, crisp grey, a shade quite unlike that possessed by any of her brothers and sisters.
"Benedict!"
she called out, throwing her arms rather exuberantly around him.
"Where have you been? Mother has been grumbling all week, wondering where you'd gone off to."
"Funny. When I spoke to Mother not 2 minutes ago, her grumbles were about you, wondering when you were finally planning to marry." Eloise pulled a face.
"When I meet someone worth marrying, that's when. I do wish someone new would move to town. I feel as though I meet the same 100 or so people over and over again."
"You do meet the same 100 or so people over and over again."
"Exactly my point," she said. "There are no secrets left in London. I already know everything about everyone."
"Really?" Benedict asked, with no small measure of sarcasm.
"Mock me all you want," she said, jabbing her finger toward him in a manner he was sure his mother would deem unladylike. "But I am not exaggerating."
"Not even a little bit," he grinned. She scowled at him.
"Where were you this past week?"
He walked into the sitting room and plopped down on a sofa. He probably should have waited for her to sit, but she was just his sister after all, and he'd never felt the need to stand on ceremony when they were alone. "Went to the Cavender party," he said, propping his feet up on a low table. "It was abominable."
"Mother will kill you if she catches you with your feet up,"
Eloise said, sitting down in a chair that was kitty corner to him.
"And why was the party so dreadful?"
"The company." He looked at his feet and decided to leave them where they were. "A more boring bunch of lazy louts I've never met."
"As long as you don't mince words."
Benedict raised a brow at her sarcasm.
"You are hereby forbidden from marrying anyone who was in attendance."
"An order I shall probably have no difficulty obeying."
She tapped her hands against the arms of her chair. Benedict had to smile.
Eloise had always been a bundle of nervous energy.
But, she said, looking up with narrowed eyes, that doesn't explain where you were all week.
Has anyone ever told you that you are exceedingly nosy?
Oh, all the time. Where were you?
And persistent, too.
It's the only way to be. Where were you?
Have I mentioned I'm considering investing in a company that manufactures human-sized muscles? She threw a pillow at him.
Where were you?
As it happens, he said, gently tossing the pillow back in her direction, the answer isn't the least bit interesting. I was at my cottage, recuperating from a nasty cold.
I thought you'd already recuperated.
He regarded her with an expression that was an unlikely cross between amazement and distaste. How do you know that?
I know everything. You should know that by now.
She grinned.
Colds can be so nasty. Did you have a setback?
He nodded. After driving in the rain.
Well, that wasn't very smart of you.
Is there any reason? He asked, glancing about the room, as if he were directing his question at someone other than Eloise. Why I am allowing myself to be insulted by my ninny-hammer of a younger sister?
Probably because I do it so well.
She kicked at his foot, trying to knock it off the table.
Mother will be here at any second, I'm sure.
No, she won't, he returned. She's busy.
Doing what?
He waved his hand toward the ceiling. Orienting the new maid. She sat up straight.
We have a new maid. Nobody told me about it.
Heavens, he drawled. Something has happened and Eloise doesn't know about it. She leaned back in her chair, then kicked his foot again.
Housemaid? Lady's maid? Scullery?
Why do you care?
It's always good to know what's what.
Lady's maid, I believe. Eloise took all of one half-second to digest that.
And how do you know?
Benedict figured he might as well tell her the truth. The Lord knew. She'd know the whole story by sundown. Even if he didn't. Because I brought her here.
The maid?
No, Mother. Of course the maid.
Since when do you trouble yourself with the hiring of servants?
Since this particular young lady nearly saved my life by nursing me while I was ill. Eloise's mouth fell open.
You were that ill?
Might as well let her believe he'd been at death's door. A little pity and concern might work to his advantage next time he needed to wheedle her into something. I have felt better, he said mildly. Where are you going? She'd already risen to her feet.
To go find Mother and meet the new maid. She's probably going to wait on Francesca and me, now that Marie is gone.
You lost your maid? Eloise scowled.
She left us for that odious Lady Penwood.
Benedict had to grin at her description. He remembered his one meeting with Lady Penwood quite well. He, too, had found her odious.
Lady Penwood is notorious for mistreating her servants. She's gone through three ladies' maids this year. Stole Mrs. Featherington's right out from under her nose, but the poor girl only lasted a fortnight.
Benedict listened patiently to his sister's tirade, amazed that he was even interested. And yet, for some strange reason, he was.
Marie will come crawling back in a week, asking us to take her back on. You mark my words,
Eloise said. I always mark your words, he replied. I just don't always care.
You,
Eloise returned, pointing her finger at him,
are going to regret that you said that.
He shook his head, smiling faintly. Doubtful.
I'm going upstairs.
Do enjoy yourself. She poked her tongue out at him. Surely not appropriate behaviour for a woman of 21, and left the room. Benedict managed to enjoy just 3 minutes of solitude before footsteps once again sounded in the hall, tapping rhythmically in his direction. When he looked up, he saw his mother in the doorway. He stood immediately. Certain manners could be ignored for one's sister, but never for one's mother.
I saw your feet on the table,
Violet said, before he could even open his mouth. I was merely polishing the surface with my boots. She raised her brows, then made her way to the chair so recently vacated by Eloise, and sat down.
All right, Benedict, she said, in an extremely no-nonsense voice. Who is she?
Miss Beckett, you mean? Violet gave him one businesslike nod. I have no idea, save that she worked for the Cavenders and was apparently mistreated by their son. Violet blanched.
Did he? Oh, dear. Was she?
I don't think so, Benedict said grimly. In fact, I'm certain she wasn't, but not for lack of trying on his part.
The poor thing. How lucky for her that you were there to save her.
Benedict found he didn't like to relive that night on the Cavenders' lawn. Even though the escapade had ended quite favourably, he could not seem to stop himself from racing through the gamut of what-ifs. What if he hadn't come along in time? What if Cavender and his friends had been a little less drunk and a little more obstinate? Sophie could have been raped. Sophie would have been raped. And now that he knew Sophie, had grown to care about her, the very notion chilled him to the bone.
Well, Violet said, she is not who she says she is. Of that I'm certain.
Benedict sat up straight. Why do you say that?
She is far too educated to be a housemaid. Her mother's employers may have allowed her to share in some of their daughter's lessons, but all of them? I doubt it. Benedict, the girl speaks French.
She does.
Well, I can't be positive, Violet admitted, but I caught her looking at a book on Francesca's desk that was written in French.
Looking is not the same as reading, Mother.
She shot him a peevish look. I'm telling you. I was looking at the way her eyes were moving. She was reading it.
If you say so, you must be correct.
Violet's eyes narrowed. Are you being sarcastic?
Normally, Benedict said with a smile, I would say yes. But in this case, I was speaking quite seriously.
Perhaps she is the cast-off daughter of an aristocratic family, Violet mused.
Cast-off?
Forgetting herself with child, she explained.
Benedict was not used to his mother speaking quite so frankly. No, he said, thinking about Sophie's steadfast refusal to become his mistress. I don't think so. But then he thought, why not? Maybe she refused to bring an illegitimate child into this world because she had already had an illegitimate child and didn't want to repeat the mistake. Benedict's mouth suddenly tasted quite sour. If Sophie had had a child, then Sophie had had a lover.
Or maybe, Violet continued, warming to the endeavour, she's the illegitimate child of a nobleman.
That was considerably more plausible and more palatable. One would think he'd have settled enough funds on her so that she didn't have to work as a housemaid.
A great many men completely ignore their byblows, Violet said, her face wrinkling with distaste. It's nothing short of scandalous.
More scandalous than their having the byblows in the first place.
Violet's expression turned quite peevish.
Besides, Benedict said, leaning back against the sofa and propping one ankle on the other knee, if she were the bastard of a nobleman, and he'd cared for her enough to make sure she had schooling as a child, then why is she completely penniless now?
That's a good point.
Violet tapped her index finger against her cheek, pursed her lips, then continued tapping.
But have no fear, she finally said. I shall discover her identity within a month.
I'd recommend asking Eloise for help, Benedict said dryly. Violet nodded thoughtfully.
Good idea. That girl could get Napoleon to spill his secrets.
Benedict stood. I must be going. I'm weary from the road and would like to get home.
You can always avail yourself here.
He gave her a half smile. His mother liked nothing better than to have her children close at hand. I need to get back to my own lodgings, he said, leaning down and dropping a kiss on her cheek.
Thank you for finding a position for Sophie.
Miss Beckett, you mean?
Violet asked, her lips curving slyly.
Sophie, Miss Beckett, Benedict said, feigning indifference. Whatever you wish to call her.
When he left, he did not see his mother smiling broadly at his back. Sophie knew that she should not allow herself to grow too comfortable at Bridgerton House. She would, after all, be leaving just as soon as she could make the arrangements. But as she looked around her room, surely the nicest any servant had ever been assigned, and she thought about Lady Bridgerton's friendly manner and easy smile, she just couldn't help wishing that she could stay forever. But that was impossible. She knew that as well as she knew that her name was Sophia Maria Beckett, not Sophia Maria Gunningworth. First and foremost, there was always the danger that she'd come into contact with Araminta, especially now that Lady Bridgerton had elevated her from housemaid to lady's maid. A lady's maid might, for example, find herself acting as a chaperone or escort on outings outside the house. Outings to places where Araminta and the girls might choose to frequent. And Sophie had no doubt that Araminta would find a way to make her life a living hell. Araminta hated her in a way that defied reason, went beyond emotion. If she saw Sophie in London, she would not be content simply to ignore her. Sophie had no doubt that Araminta would lie, cheat and steal just to make Sophie's life more difficult. She hated Sophie that much. But if Sophie were to be honest with herself, the true reason she could not remain in London was not Araminta. It was Benedict. How could she avoid him when she lived in his mother's household? She was furious with him right now. Beyond furious, in all truth. But she knew, deep down, that anger could only be short-lived. How could she resist him, day in and day out, when the mere sight of him made her weak with longing? Some day soon he'd smile at her, one of those sideways, crooked sorts of smiles, and she'd find herself clutching onto the furniture just to keep herself from melting into a pathetic pool on the floor. She'd fallen in love with the wrong man. She could never have him on her terms, and she refused to go to him on his. It was hopeless. Sophie was saved from any further depressing thoughts by a brisk knock on her door. When she called out, "Yes," the door opened, and Lady Bridgerton entered the room. Sophie immediately jumped to her feet and bobbed a curtsy.
"Was there anything you needed, my lady?" she asked.
"No, not at all," Lady Bridgerton replied.
"I was merely checking to see if you were getting settled in. Is there anything I can get for you?"
Sophie blinked. Lady Bridgerton was asking her if she needed anything. Rather the reverse of the usual lady-servant relationship.
No, thank you," Sophie said. "I would be happy to get something for you, though."
Lady Bridgerton waved her offer away.
"No need. You shouldn't feel you have to do anything for us today. I'd prefer that you get yourself settled in first, so that you do not feel distracted when you begin."
Sophie cast her eyes toward her small bag.
"I don't have much to unpack. Truly, I should be happy to begin work immediately."
"Nonsense. It's already nearly the end of the day, and we are not planning to go out this evening anyway. The girls and I have made do with only one lady's maid for the past week. We shall certainly survive for one more night."
"But," Lady Bridgerton smiled, "no arguments, if you please. One last day free is the least I can do after you saved my son."
"I did very little," Sophie said. "He would have been fine without me."
"Nonetheless, you aided him when he needed help, and for that I am in your debt."
"It was my pleasure," Sophie replied. "It was the very least I owed him after what he did for me."
Then, to her great surprise, Lady Bridgerton walked forward and sat down in the chair behind Sophie's writing desk.
Writing desk? Sophie was still trying to fathom that. What maid had ever been blessed with a writing desk?
"So tell me, Sophie,"
Lady Bridgerton said with a winning smile, one that instantly reminded her of Benedict's easy grin. Where are you from?
East Anglia, originally,
Sophie replied, seeing no reason to lie. The Bridgertons were from Kent. It was unlikely that Lady Bridgerton would be familiar with Norfolk, where Sophie had grown up.
Not so very far from Sandringham, if you know where that is.
I do indeed, Lady Bridgerton said. I haven't been, but I've heard that it is a lovely building. Sophie nodded.
It is, quite. Of course, I've never been inside, but the exterior is beautiful. Where did your mother work?
Blackheath Hall,
Sophie replied, this lie slipping easily off her tongue. She'd been asked that question often enough. She'd long since settled upon a name for her fictional home.
Are you familiar with it?
Lady Bridgerton's brow furrowed.
No, I don't believe so.
A bit north of Swaffham?
Lady Bridgerton shook her head.
No, I do not know it.
Sophie gave her a gentle smile.
Not many people do. Do you have any brothers or sisters?
Sophie was unused to an employer wanting to know so much about her personal background. Usually all they cared about were her employment record and references.
No,
she said.
There was only me.
Ah, well, at least you had the company of the girls with whom you shared lessons. That must have been nice for you.
It was good fun,
Sophie lied. In all truth, studying with Rosamond and Posy had been sheer torture. She'd much preferred lessons when she'd been alone with her governess, before they'd come to live at Penwood Park.
I must say, it was very generous of your mother's employers. I'm sorry.
Lady Bridgerton interrupted herself, her brow furrowing.
What did you say their name was?
Grenville.
Her forehead wrinkled again.
I'm not familiar with them.
They don't often come to London.
Ah, well, that explains it, Lady Bridgerton said. But as I was saying, it was very generous of them to allow you to share in their daughter's lessons. What did you study?
Sophie froze, not sure whether she was being interrogated or if Lady Bridgerton were truly interested. No one had ever cared to delve so deeply into the faux background she had created for herself.
The usual subjects, she hedged. Arithmetic and literature, history, a bit of mythology, French.
French? Lady Bridgerton asked, looking quite surprised.
How interesting. French tutors can be very dear. The governess spoke French,
Sophie explained, so it didn't cost any extra.
How is your French?
Sophie wasn't about to tell her the truth and say that it was perfect, or almost perfect. She'd gotten out of practice these past few years and lost a bit of her fluency.
It's tolerable, she said.
Good enough to pass for a French maid, if that's what you desire.
No, Lady Bridgerton said, laughing merrily. Heavens, no.
I know it is all the rage to have French maids, but I would never ask you to go about your chores trying to remember to speak with a French accent.
That's very thoughtful of you,
Sophie said, trying not to let her suspicion show on her face. She was sure that Lady Bridgerton was a nice lady. She'd have to be a nice lady to have raised such a nice family. But this was almost too nice.
Well, it's... Oh, good day, Eloise. What brings you up here?
Sophie looked to the doorway and saw what could only be a Bridgerton daughter standing there. Her thick chestnut hair was coiled elegantly at the back of her neck, and her mouth was wide and expressive, just like Benedict's.
Benedict told me we have a new maid,
Eloise said. Lady Bridgerton motioned to Sophie.
This is Sophie Beckett. We were just chatting. I think we shall deal famously.
Eloise gave her mother an odd look, or at least Sophie thought it was an odd look. She supposed that it was possible that Eloise always looked at her mother with a slightly suspicious, slightly confused, sideways glance. But somehow Sophie didn't think so.
My brother tells me you saved his life,
Eloise said, turning from her mother to Sophie.
He exaggerates,
Sophie said, a faint smile touching her lips. Eloise regarded her with an oddly shrewd glance,
and Sophie had the distinct impression that Eloise was analysing her smile, trying to decide whether or not she was poking fun at Benedict, and if so, whether it was in jest or unkindness. The moment seemed suspended in time, and then Eloise's lips curved in a surprisingly sly manner.
"I think my mother is correct," she said. "We shall deal famously."
Sophie rather thought she had just passed some sort of crucial test.
"Have you met Francesca and Hyacinth?"
Eloise asked. Sophie shook her head, just as Lady Bridgerton said, "They are not at home. Francesca is visiting Daphne, and Hyacinth is off at the Featheringtons. She and Felicity seem to be over their row, and are once again inseparable." Eloise chuckled.
"Poor Penelope! I think she was enjoying the relative peace and quiet with Hyacinth gone. I know I was enjoying the respite from Felicity."
Lady Bridgerton turned to Sophie and explained,
"My daughter Hyacinth can more often than not be found at the home of her best friend, Felicity Featherington, and when she is not, then Felicity can be found here."
Sophie smiled and nodded, wondering once again why they were sharing such tidbits with her. They were treating her like family, something even her own family had never done. It was very odd. Odd and wonderful. Odd and wonderful and horrible. Because it could never last. But maybe she could stay just a little while. Not long. A few weeks. Maybe even a month. Just long enough to get her affairs and thoughts in order. Just long enough to relax and pretend she was more than just a servant. She knew she could never be a part of the Bridgerton family, but maybe she could be a friend. And it had been so long since she had been anyone's friend.
"Is something wrong, Sophie?" Lady Bridgerton asked. "You have a tear in your eye."
Sophie shook her head.
"Just a speck of dust,"
she mumbled, pretending to busy herself with the unpacking of her small bag of possessions. She knew that no one believed her, but she didn't much care. And even though she had no idea where she intended to go from this moment on, she had the oddest feeling that her life had just begun. Chapter 15.
This author is quite certain that the male half of the population will be uninterested in the following portion of the column, so you are all given leave to skip to the next section. However, for the ladies, let this author be the first to inform you that the Bridgerton family was recently sucked into the Battle of the Maids that has been raging all season between Lady Penwood and Mrs. Featherington. It seems that the maid attending to the daughters, Bridgerton, has defected to the Penwoods, replacing the maid who fled back to the Featherington household after Lady Penwood forced her to polish 300 pairs of shoes. And in other Bridgerton news, Benedict Bridgerton is most definitely back in London. It seems he took ill while in the country and extended his stay. One wishes that there were a more interesting explanation, especially when one is, like this author, dependent upon interesting stories to earn one's living. But sadly, that is all there is to it. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 14th of May, 1817. By the following morning, Sophie had met five of Benedict's seven siblings. Eloise, Francesca and Hyacinth all still lived with their mother. Antony had stopped by with his young son for breakfast, and Daphne, who was now the Duchess of Hastings, had been summoned to help Lady Bridgerton plan the end-of-the-season ball. The only Bridgertons Sophie hadn't met were Gregory, who was off at Eton, and Colin, who was off, in Antony's words, God knows where. Although, if one wanted to put a fine point on it, Sophie already had met Colin 2 years earlier at the masquerade. She was rather relieved that he was out of town. She doubted that he would recognise her. Benedict, after all, had not. But somehow, the thought of meeting him again was quite stressful and unsettling. Not that that should matter, she thought ruefully. Everything seemed quite stressful and unsettling these days. Much to Sophie's extreme lack of surprise,
Benedict showed up at his mother's home the following morning for breakfast. Sophie should have been able to avoid him completely, except that he was loitering in the hall as she tried to make her way down to the kitchen, where she planned to take her morning meal with the rest of the servants.
"And how was your first night at number 5 Bruton Street?"
he inquired, his smile lazy and masculine.
"Splendid,"
Sophie replied, stepping aside so that she might make a clean half-circle around him. But as she stepped to her left, he stepped to his right, effectively blocking her path.
"I'm so glad you're enjoying yourself,"
he said smoothly. Sophie stepped back to her right.
"I was,"
she said pointedly. Benedict was far too debonair to step back to his left, but he somehow managed to turn and lean against a table, in just the right way to once again block her movement.
"Have you been given a tour of the house?"
he asked.
"By the housekeeper."
"And of the grounds?"
"There are no grounds."
He smiled, his brown eyes warm and melting.
"There's a garden."
"About the size of a pound note,"
she retorted.
"Nonetheless."
"Nonetheless,"
Sophie cut in,
"I have to eat breakfast."
He stepped gallantly aside.
"Until next time,"
he murmured. And Sophie had the sinking feeling that next time would come quickly indeed. 30 minutes later, Sophie edged slowly out of the kitchen, half expecting Benedict to jump out at her from around a corner. Well, maybe not half expecting. Judging from the way she couldn't quite breathe, she was probably whole expecting. But he wasn't there. She inched forward. Surely he would come bounding down the stairs at any moment, ambushing her with his very presence. Still, no Benedict. Sophie opened her mouth, then bit her tongue when she realized she'd been about to call out his name.
"Stupid girl,"
she muttered.
"Who's stupid?" Benedict asked. "Surely not you."
Sophie nearly jumped a foot.
"Where did you come from?"
she demanded, once she'd almost caught her breath. He pointed to an open doorway.
"Right there,"
he answered, his voice all innocence.
"So now you're jumping out at me from closets?"
"Of course not."
He looked affronted.
"That was a staircase."
Sophie peered around him. It was the side staircase, the servants' staircase. Certainly not any place a family member would just happen to be walking.
"Do you often creep down the side staircase?"
she asked, crossing her arms. He leaned forward, just close enough to make her slightly uncomfortable, and although she would never admit it to anyone, barely even herself, slightly excited.
"Only when I want to sneak up on someone."
She attempted to brush past him.
"I have to get to work."
"Now?"
she gritted her teeth.
"Yes, now."
"But Hyacinth is eating breakfast. You can hardly dress her hair while she's eating."
"I also attend to Francesca and Eloise."
He shrugged, smiling innocently.
"They're eating breakfast too. Truly, you have nothing to do."
"Which shows how little you know about working for a living,"
she shot back.
"I have ironing, mending, polishing."
"They make you polish the silver."
"Shoes!"
she fairly yelled.
"I have to polish shoes."
"Oh."
He leaned back, one shoulder resting against the wall as he crossed his arms.
"It sounds dull."
"It is dull,"
she ground out, trying to ignore the tears that suddenly pricked her eyes. She knew her life was dull, but it was painful to hear someone else point it out. One corner of his mouth lifted into a lazy, seductive smile.
"Your life doesn't have to be dull, you know."
She tried to step past him.
"I prefer it dull."
He waved his arm grandly to the side, motioning for her to pass.
"If that is how you wish it."
"I do."
But the words didn't come out nearly as firmly as she'd intended.
"I do,"
she repeated.
"Oh, very well."
No use lying to herself. She didn't. Not entirely. But that was the way it had to be.
"Are you trying to convince yourself or me?"
he asked softly.
"I won't even dignify that with an answer,"
she replied, but she didn't meet his eyes as she said it.
"You'd best get yourself upstairs, then," he said, raising one brow when she didn't move. "I'm sure you have a great many shoes to polish."
Sophie ran up the stairs, the servant's stairs, and didn't look back. He next found her in the garden, that tiny patch of green she'd so recently and accurately mocked as the size of a pound note. The Bridgerton sisters had gone off to visit the Featherington sisters, and Lady Bridgerton was taking a nap. Sophie had all of their gowns pressed and ready for that evening's social event. Hair ribbons were selected and matched to each dress, and enough shoes had been polished to last a week. With all her work done, Sophie decided to take a short break and read in the garden. Lady Bridgerton had told her that she might borrow freely from her small library of books, so Sophie selected a recently published novel and settled herself into a wrought iron chair on the small patio. She'd only read a chapter before she heard footsteps approaching from the house. Somehow, she managed not to look up until a shadow fell across her. Predictably, it was Benedict.
"Do you live here?"
Sophie asked dryly. "No," he said, plopping down into the chair next to her. "Although my mother is constantly telling me to make myself right at home." She could think of no witty rejoinder, so she merely humphed and stuck her nose back in her book. He plunked his feet on the small table in front.
"And what are we reading today?"
"That question," she said, snapping the book shut, but leaving her finger in to mark her place, "implies that I am actually reading, which I assure you I am unable to do while you are sitting here."
"My presence is that compelling, eh?"
"It's that disturbing."
"Better than dull," he pointed out.
"I like my life dull."
"If you like your life dull, then that can only mean that you do not understand the nature of excitement."
The condescension in his tone was appalling. Sophie gripped her book so hard her knuckles turned white.
"I have had enough excitement in my life," she said through gritted teeth. "I assure you."
"I would be pleased to participate in this conversation to a greater degree," he drawled, "except that you have not seen fit to share with me any of the details of your life."
"It was not an oversight on my part."
He clucked disapprovingly.
"So hostile."
Her eyes bugged out.
"You abducted me."
"Coerced,"
he reminded her.
"Do you want me to hit you?"
"I wouldn't mind it," he said mildly. "And besides, now that you're here, was it really so very terrible that I browbeat you into coming? You like my family, don't you?"
"Yes, but..."
"And they treat you fairly, right?"
"Yes, but..."
"Then what?" he asked, his tone most supercilious, "is the problem?"
Sophie almost lost her temper. She almost jumped to her feet and grabbed his shoulders and shook and shook and shook. But at the last moment, she realized that that was exactly what he wanted her to do. And so, instead, she merely sniffed and said,
"If you cannot recognize the problem, there is no way that I could explain it to you."
He laughed, damn the man.
"My goodness," he said. "That was an expert sidestep."
She picked up her book and opened it.
"I'm reading."
"Trying, at least," he murmured. She flipped a page, even though she hadn't read the last two paragraphs. She was really just trying to make a show of ignoring him. And besides, she could always go back and read them later, after he left.
"Your book is upside down," he pointed out.
Sophie gasped and looked down.
"It is not."
He smiled slyly.
"But you still had to look to be sure, didn't you?"
She stood up and announced, He stood immediately.
"And leave the splendid spring air."
"And leave you,"
she retorted, even though his gesture of respect was not lost on her. Gentlemen did not ordinarily stand for mere servants.
"Pity," he murmured. "I was having such fun."
Sophie wondered how much injury he'd sustain if she threw the book at him. Probably not enough to make up for the loss to her dignity. It amazed her how easily he could infuriate her. She loved him desperately. She'd long since given up lying to herself about that. And yet he could make her entire body shake with anger with one little quip.
"Goodbye, Mr. Bridgerton."
He waved her off.
"I'll see you later, I'm sure."
Sophie paused, not sure she liked his dismissive demeanour.
"I thought you were leaving," he said, looking faintly amused.
"I am,"
she insisted. He cocked his head to the side, but didn't say anything. He didn't have to. The vaguely mocking expression in his eyes did the job quite well. She turned and walked toward the door leading inside. But when she was about halfway to her destination, she heard him call out,
"Your new dress is quite fetching."
She stopped and sighed. She might have gone from faux guardian of an earl to a mere lady's maid, but good manners were good manners, and there was no way she could ignore a compliment. Turning around, she said,
"Thank you. It was a gift from your mother. I believe it used to belong to Francesca."
He leaned against the fence, his posture deceptively lazy.
"That's a custom, isn't it, to share frocks with one's maid?"
Sophie nodded.
"When one is through with them, of course. No one would give a new frock away."
"I see."
Sophie eyed him suspiciously, wondering why on earth he cared about the status of her new dress.
"Didn't you want to go inside?" he inquired.
"What are you up to?"
she asked.
"Why would you think I'm up to anything?"
Her lips pursed before she said,
"You wouldn't be you if you weren't up to something."
He smiled at that.
"I do believe that was a compliment."
"It wasn't necessarily intended as such."
"But nonetheless," he said mildly, "that's how I choose to take it."
She wasn't sure how best to respond, so she said nothing. She also didn't move toward the door. She wasn't sure why, since she'd been quite vocal about her desire to be alone. But what she said and what she felt weren't always one and the same. In her heart, she longed for this man, dreamed of a life that could never be. She shouldn't be so angry with him. He shouldn't have forced her against her wishes to come to London, that was true, but she couldn't fault him for offering her a position as his mistress. He had done what any man in his position would have done. Sophie had no illusions about her place in London society. She was a maid, a servant, and the only thing that separated her from other maids and servants was that she'd had a taste of luxury as a child. She'd been reared gently, if without love, and the experience had shaped her ideals and values. Now she was forever stuck between two worlds, with no clear place in either.
"You look very serious," he said quietly.
Sophie heard him, but she couldn't quite break herself from her thoughts. Benedict stepped forward. He reached out to touch her chin, then checked himself. There was something untouchable about her just then, something unreachable.
"I can't bear it when you look so sad," he said,
surprised by his own words. He hadn't intended to say anything. It had just slipped out. She looked up at that.
"I'm not sad."
He gave his head the tiniest shake.
"There's a sorrow deep in your eyes. It's rarely gone."
Her hand flew to her face, as if she could actually touch that sorrow, as if it was solid, something that could be massaged away. Benedict took her hand and raised it to his lips.
"I wish you would share your secrets with me."
"I have no—"
"Don't lie,"
he cut in, his tone harsher than he'd intended.
"You have more secrets than any woman I've—"
He broke off, a sudden image of the woman from the masquerade flashing through his mind.
"More than almost any woman I've known," he finished.
Her eyes met his for the briefest of seconds, and then she looked away.
"There is nothing wrong with secrets. If I choose—"
"Your secrets are eating you alive,"
he said sharply. He didn't want to stand there and listen to her excuses, and his frustration gnawed at his patience.
You have the opportunity to change your life, to reach out and grasp happiness, and yet you won't do it.
I can't,
she said, and the pain in her voice nearly unmanned him. Nonsense, he said. You can do anything you choose. You just don't want to.
Don't make this harder than it already is, she whispered.
When she said that, something snapped inside of him. He felt it palpably, a strange popping sensation that released a rush of blood, feeding the frustrated anger that had been simmering inside of him for days.
You think it's not hard? He asked. You think it's not hard?
I didn't say that.
He grabbed her hand and pulled her body against his, so she could see for herself just how hard he was.
I burn for you, he said,
his lips touching her ear.
Every night I lie in bed thinking of you, wondering why the hell you're here with my mother, of all people, and not with me.
I didn't want...
You don't know what you want, he cut in.
It was a cruel statement, condescending in the extreme, but he was beyond caring. She'd wounded him in a way he hadn't even known was possible, with a power he'd never dreamed she possessed. She'd chosen a life of drudgery over a life with him, and now he was doomed to see her almost every day. To see her, and taste her, and smell her just enough to keep his desire sharp and strong. It was his own fault, of course. He could have let her stay in the country, could have saved himself this wrenching torture. But he'd surprised even himself by insisting that she come to London. It was odd, and he was almost afraid to analyze what it meant. But he needed to know that she was safe and protected more than he needed her for himself. She said his name, but her voice was laced with longing, and he knew that she was not indifferent to him. She might not fully understand what it meant to want a man, but she wanted him all the same. He captured her mouth with his, swearing to himself as he did so that if she said no, if she made any sort of indication that she didn't want this, he'd stop. It would be the hardest thing he'd ever done, but he would do it. But she didn't say no, and she didn't push against him, or struggle or squirm. Instead, she positively melted into him, her hands twining in his hair as her lips parted beneath his. He didn't know why she'd suddenly decided to let him kiss her. No, to kiss him, but he wasn't about to lift his lips from hers to wonder why. He seized the moment, tasting her, drinking her, breathing her. He was no longer quite so confident that he would be able to convince her to become his mistress, and it was suddenly imperative that this kiss be more than just a kiss. It might have to last him a lifetime. He kissed her with renewed vigour, pushing away the niggling voice in his head, telling him that he'd been here, done this before. 2 years earlier, he'd danced with a woman, kissed her, and she'd told him that he'd have to pack a lifetime into a single kiss. He'd been overconfident then. He hadn't believed her. And he'd lost her. Maybe lost everything. He certainly hadn't met anyone since with whom he could even imagine building a life. Until Sophie. Unlike the lady in silver, she wasn't someone he could hope to marry. But also unlike the lady in silver, she was here. And he wasn't going to let her get away. She was here with him, and she felt like heaven. The soft scent of her hair, the slight taste of salt on her skin. She was, he thought, born to rest in the shelter of his arms, and he was born to hold her. Come home with me, he whispered in her ear. She said nothing, but he felt her stiffen. Come home with me, he repeated.
I can't,
she said, the breath of each word whispering across his skin.
You can.
She shook her head, but she didn't pull away, so he took advantage of the moment and brought his lips to hers one more time. His tongue darted in, exploring the warm recesses of her mouth, tasting the very essence of her. His hand found the swell of her breast, and he squeezed gently,
his breath catching as he felt her pucker beneath him. But it wasn't enough. He wanted to feel her skin, not the fabric of her dress. But this was not the place. They were in his mother's garden, for God's sake. Anyone could come across them. And to be frank, if he hadn't pulled her into the alcove right by the door, anyone could have seen them. It was the sort of thing that could cause Sophie to lose her job. Maybe he should be pulling her out into the open, where all the world would see, because then she'd be on her own again, and she'd have no choice but to be his mistress, which was, he reminded himself, what he wanted. But it occurred to him, and frankly, he was rather surprised he had the presence of mind at such a moment for anything to occur to him, that part of the reason he cared so much for her was her remarkably solid and unflinching sense of herself. She knew who she was, and, unfortunately for him, that person didn't stray from the bounds of respectable society. If he ruined her so publicly, in front of people she admired and respected, he'd break her spirit, and that would be an unforgivable crime. Slowly, he pulled away. He still wanted her, and he still wanted her to be his mistress, but he wasn't going to force the issue by compromising her in his mother's household. When she came to him, and she would, he vowed, it would be of her own free will. In the meantime, he would woo her, wear her down. In the meantime, he'd...
"You stopped,"
she whispered, looking surprised.
"This isn't the place," he replied.
For a moment, her face showed no change of expression. Then, almost as if someone were pulling a shade over her face, horror dawned. It started in her eyes, which grew impossibly round and somehow even more green than usual. Then it reached her mouth, her lips parting as a gasp of air rushed in.
"I didn't think,"
she whispered, more to herself than to him.
"I know," he smiled. "I know. I hate it when you think. It always ends badly for me."
"We can't do this again."
"We certainly can't do it here."
"No, I mean..."
"You're spoiling it."
"But..."
"Humour me," he said, "and let me believe the afternoon ended without your telling me this will never happen again."
"But..."
He pressed a finger to her lips.
"You're not humouring me."
"But..."
"Don't I deserve this one little fantasy?"
At last he broke through. She smiled.
"Good," he said. "That's more like it."
Her lips quivered. Then, amazingly, her smile grew.
"Excellent," he murmured. "Now then, I'm going to leave, and you have only one task while I go. You will stay right here, and you will keep smiling, because it breaks my heart to see any other expression on your face."
"You won't be able to see me,"
she pointed out. He touched her chin.
"I'll know."
And then, before her expression could change from that enchanting combination of shock and adoration, he left.
Chapter 16. The Featheringtons hosted a small dinner party yesterday eve, and although this author was not privileged enough to attend, it has been said that the evening was deemed quite a success. Three Bridgertons attended, but sadly for the Featherington girls, none of the Bridgertons were of the male variety. The always amiable Nigel Burbrook was there, paying great attention to Miss Philippa Featherington. This author is told that both Benedict and Colin Bridgerton were invited, but had to send their regrets. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 19th of May, 1817. As the days melted into a week, Sophie discovered that working for the Bridgertons could keep a girl very busy indeed. Her job was to be maid to all three unmarried girls, and her days were filled with hairdressing, mending, pressing gowns, polishing shoes. She hadn't left the house even once, unless one counted time out in the back garden. But where such a life under Araminta had been dreary and demeaning,
The Bridgerton household was filled with laughter and smiles. The girls bickered and teased, but never with the malice Sophie had seen Rosamond show to Posy. And when tea was informal, upstairs, with only Lady Bridgerton and the girls in attendance, Sophie was always invited to partake. She usually brought her basket of mending and darned or sewed buttons while the Bridgertons chattered away. But it was so lovely to be able to sit and sip a fine cup of tea with fresh milk and warm scones. And after a few days, Sophie even began to feel comfortable enough to occasionally add to the conversation. It had become Sophie's favourite time of day.
"Where?"
Eloise asked, one afternoon about a week after what Sophie was now referring to as the big kiss.
"Do you suppose Benedict is?" "Ow!"
Four Bridgerton faces turned to Sophie.
"Are you all right?"
Lady Bridgerton asked, her teacup suspended halfway between her saucer and her mouth. Sophie grimaced.
"I pricked my finger."
Lady Bridgerton's lips curved into a small, secret smile.
"Mother has told you,"
14-year-old Hyacinth said.
"At least 1,000 times.
1,000 times? Francesca asked with arched brows.
100 times,
Hyacinth amended, shooting an annoyed look at her older sister.
"That you do not have to bring your mending to tea."
Sophie suppressed a smile of her own. "I should feel very lazy if I did not."
"Well, I'm not going to bring my embroidery,"
Hyacinth announced, not that anyone had asked her to. "Feeling lazy?" Francesca queried.
"Not in the least,"
Hyacinth returned. Francesca turned to Sophie.
"You're making Hyacinth feel lazy." "I do not,"
Hyacinth protested. Lady Bridgerton sipped at her tea.
"You have been working on the same piece of embroidery for quite some time, Hyacinth. Since February, if my memory serves." "Her memory always serves,"
Francesca said to Sophie. Hyacinth glared at Francesca, who smiled into her teacup. Sophie coughed to cover a smile of her own. Francesca, who at 20 was merely 1 year younger than Eloise, had a sly, subversive sense of humour. Some day Hyacinth would be her match, but not yet.
"Nobody answered my question,"
Eloise announced, letting her teacup clatter into its saucer.
"Where is Benedict? I haven't seen him in an age."
"It's been a week," Lady Bridgerton said.
"Ow! Do you need a thimble?"
Hyacinth asked Sophie.
"I'm not usually this clumsy,"
Sophie muttered. Lady Bridgerton lifted her cup to her lips and held it there for what seemed like a rather long time. Sophie gritted her teeth together and returned to her mending with a vengeance. Much to her surprise, Benedict had not made even the barest of appearances since the big kiss last week. She'd found herself peering out windows, peeking around corners, always expecting to catch a glimpse of him. And yet he was never there. Sophie couldn't decide whether she was crushed or relieved or both. She sighed. Definitely both.
"Did you say something, Sophie?"
Eloise asked. Sophie shook her head and murmured, "No," refusing to look up from her poor, abused index finger. Grimacing slightly, she pinched her skin, watching blood slowly bead up on her fingertip.
"Where is he?"
Eloise persisted. "Benedict is 30 years of age," Lady Bridgerton said in a mild voice. "He doesn't need to inform us of his every activity." Eloise snorted loudly.
"That's a fine about-face from last week, Mother."
"Whatever do you mean?"
"Where is Benedict?"
Eloise mocked, doing a more than fair imitation of her mother.
"How dare he go off without a word? It's as if he's dropped off the face of the earth."
"That was different,"
Lady Bridgerton said.
"How so?"
This from Francesca, who was wearing her usual sly smile.
"He'd said he was going to that awful Cavender boys' party, and then never came back. Whereas this time..."
Lady Bridgerton stopped, pursing her lips.
"Why am I explaining myself to you?"
"I can't imagine,"
Sophie murmured. Eloise, who was sitting closest to Sophie, choked on her tea. Francesca whacked Eloise on the back as she leaned forward to inquire,
"Did you say something, Sophie?"
Sophie shook her head as she stabbed her needle into the dress she was mending, completely missing the hem. Eloise gave her a dubious sideways glance. Lady Bridgerton cleared her throat.
"Well, I think..."
She stopped, cocking her head to the side.
"I say, is that someone in the hall?"
Sophie stifled a groan and looked over toward the doorway, expecting the butler to enter. Wickham always gave her a disapproving frown before imparting whatever news he was carrying. He didn't approve of the maid taking tea with the ladies of the house, and while he never vocalized his thoughts on the issue in front of the Bridgertons, he rarely took pains to keep his opinions from showing on his face. But instead of Wickham, Benedict walked through the doorway.
"Benedict!"
Eloise called out, rising to her feet.
"We were just talking about you."
He looked at Sophie. "Were you?"
"I wasn't,"
Sophie muttered.
"Did you say something, Sophie?"
Hyacinth asked.
"Ow!
I'm going to have to take that mending away from you," Lady Bridgerton said with an amused smile. "You'll have lost a pint of blood before the day is through." Sophie lurched to her feet.
"I'll get a thimble."
"You don't have a thimble?"
Hyacinth asked.
"I would never dream of doing mending without a thimble."
"Have you ever dreamed of mending?"
Francesca smirked. Hyacinth kicked her, nearly upsetting the tea service in the process.
"Hyacinth!"
Lady Bridgerton scolded. Sophie stared at the door, trying desperately to keep her eyes focused on anything but Benedict. She'd spent all week hoping for a glimpse, but now that he was here, all she wanted was to escape. If she looked at his face, her eyes inevitably strayed to his lips. And if she looked at his lips, her thoughts immediately went to their kiss. And if she thought about the kiss...
"I need that thimble,"
she blurted out, jumping to her feet. There were some things one just shouldn't think about in public.
"So you said," Benedict murmured,
one of his eyebrows quirking up into a perfect and perfectly arrogant arch.
"It's downstairs,"
she muttered.
"In my room."
"But your room is upstairs,"
Hyacinth said. Sophie could have killed her.
"That's what I said,"
she ground out.
"No,"
Hyacinth said in a matter-of-fact tone.
"You didn't."
"Yes," Lady Bridgerton said.
"She did. I heard her."
Sophie twisted her head sharply to look at Lady Bridgerton and knew in an instant that the older woman had lied.
"I have to get that thimble,"
she said, for what seemed like the 30th time. She hurried toward the doorway, gulping as she grew close to Benedict.
"Wouldn't want you to hurt yourself,"
he said, stepping aside to allow her through the doorway. But as she brushed past him, he leaned forward, whispering, "Coward." Sophie's cheeks burned, and she was halfway down the stairs before she realized that she'd meant to go back to her room. Dash it all. She didn't want to march back up the stairs and have to walk past Benedict again. He was probably still standing in the doorway, and his lips would tilt upward as she passed, one of those faintly mocking, faintly seductive smiles that never failed to leave her breathless. This was a disaster. There was no way she was going to be able to stay here. How could she remain with Lady Bridgerton when every glimpse of Benedict turned her knees to water? She just wasn't strong enough. He was going to wear her down, make her forget all of her principles, all of her vows. She was going to have to leave. There was no other option. And that was really too bad, because she liked working for the Bridgerton sisters. They treated her like a human being, not like some barely paid workhorse. They asked her questions and seemed to care about her answers. Sophie knew she wasn't one of them, would never be one of them, but they made it so easy to pretend. And in all truth, all that Sophie had ever really wanted out of life was a family. With the Bridgertons, she could almost pretend that she had one.
"Lost your way?"
Sophie looked up to see Benedict at the top of the stairs, leaning lazily against the wall.
She looked down and realized that she was still standing on the stairs.
"I'm going out," she said.
"To buy a thimble?"
"Yes,"
she said defiantly.
"Don't you need money?"
She could lie and say that she had money in her pocket, or she could tell the truth and show herself for the pathetic fool she was, or she could just run down the stairs and out of the house. It was the cowardly thing to do, but...
"I have to go,"
she muttered, and dashed away so quickly that she completely forgot she ought to be using the servants' entrance. She skidded across the foyer and pushed open the heavy door, stumbling her way down the front steps. When her feet hit the pavement, she turned north, not for any particular reason, just because she had to go somewhere. And then she heard a voice, an awful, horrible, terrible voice. Dear God, it was Araminta. Sophie's heart stopped, and she quickly pressed herself back against the wall. Araminta was facing the street, and unless she turned around, she'd never notice Sophie. At least it was easy to remain silent when one couldn't even breathe. What was she doing here? Penwood House was at least 8 blocks away, closer to... Then Sophie remembered. She'd read it in Whistledown last year, one of the few copies she'd been able to get her hands on while she was working for the Cavenders. The new Earl of Penwood had finally decided to take up residence in London. Araminta, Rosamond and Posy had been forced to find new accommodations. Next door to the Bridgertons. Sophie couldn't have imagined a worse nightmare if she tried.
"Where is that insufferable girl?" she heard Araminta say.
Sophie immediately felt sorry for the girl in question. As Araminta's former insufferable girl, she knew that the position came with few benefits.
"Posy!"
Araminta yelled, then marched into a waiting carriage. Sophie chewed on her lip, her heart sinking. In that moment, she knew exactly what must have happened when she left. Araminta would have hired a new maid, and she was probably just beastly to the poor girl, but she wouldn't have been able to degrade and demean her in quite the same fashion she'd done with Sophie. You had to know a person, really hate them, to be so cruel. Any old servant wouldn't do. And since Araminta had to put someone down, she didn't know how to feel good about herself without making someone else feel bad. She'd obviously chosen Posy as her whipping boy, or girl, as the case might be. Posy came dashing out the door, her face pinched and drawn. She looked unhappy, and perhaps a bit heavier than she had been 2 years earlier. Araminta wouldn't like that, Sophie thought glumly. She'd never been able to accept that Posy wasn't petite and blonde and beautiful like Rosamond and herself. If Sophie had been Araminta's nemesis, then Posy had always been her disappointment. Sophie watched as Posy stopped at the top of the steps, then reached down to fiddle with the laces of her short boots. Rosamond poked her head out of the carriage, yelling,
"Posy!"
in what Sophie thought was a rather unattractively shrill voice. Sophie ducked back, turning her head away. She was right in Rosamond's line of sight.
"I'm coming,"
Posy called out.
"Hurry up,"
Rosamond snapped. Posy finished tying her laces, then hurried forward, but her foot slipped on the final step, and a moment later she was sprawled on the pavement. Sophie lurched forward, instinctively moving to help Posy, but she jammed herself back against the wall. Posy was unhurt, and there was nothing in life Sophie wanted less than for Araminta to know that she was in London, practically right next door. Posy picked herself off the pavement, stopping to stretch her neck, first to the right, then to the left, then she saw her. Sophie was sure of it. Posy's eyes widened, and her mouth fell open slightly. Then her lips came together, pursed to make the S to begin. "Sophie?" Sophie shook her head frantically.
"Posy!"
came Araminta's irate cry. Sophie shook her head again, her eyes begging, pleading with Posy not to give her away.
"I'm coming, Mother,"
Posy called. She gave Sophie a single, short nod, then climbed up into the carriage, which thankfully rolled off in the opposite direction. Sophie sagged against the building. She didn't move for a full minute, and then